as a result of working 2 summers in Belgium and interning at a Brussels-based law firm, you obviously obtained a lot of experience and you developed some of the skills that are necessary for lawyers and also for people working in the legal profession. So what would you say is the best advice that you can provide to those who are perhaps interested in learning more about European and international law?
So this will very much echo what you just said. I absolutely agree with everything you said. If you know that you're interested in law, I would suggest to a student to not spend time studying something else, political science, economics, or philosophy alone, because it might simply just not satisfy you. Here in Canada, as you said, we have the option to do it pre-law or legal studies as an undergrad, like the one you completed yourself before going into a law school. But in Europe, it's something that you do as an undergraduate student. So here you have a little bit more time to decide if you like to pursue a legal career. I believe reaching out to people who are experts in their field is the best way to form an opinion about how things actually work in the legal world and where your studies might lead you to. In high school, I remember contacting influential lawyers in Istanbul and elsewhere and asking them if I could visit their office and asking them to have a coffee meeting, and they almost never turned me down because they realized that it is an important decision to make and that they themselves went through this. Plus, people love to talk about themselves and giving advice.
That's true.
Lastly, I've already said this before, but commitment to your core values and that sense of mission are essentially what keep your passion for law alive.
I absolutely agree with you. That passion is so important. Oftentimes with any degree, as you know, the demands are high, the requirements are there, and you have to satisfy all of those requirements and you have to just push yourself. And oftentimes in a career such as law, I have friends who are lawyers and they tell me, they advise me to keep going and to keep pushing. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes when you complete a degree that's very demanding, it's something you have to want. Mm-hmm. And it's something you have to want to study. And if you're passionate, and this applies to any field, not just law, it applies to international relations, politics, any field out there. Mm-hmm. If you enjoy what you're studying, it makes it very easy for you to succeed.
Yeah.
If you're studying something that you dislike or that is difficult for you to understand, then it's going to be a challenge every day. Mm-hmm. So the best advice that we can give to the students as they're listening to this interview today is to pursue a field that you're passionate about. Take that passion and move forward and keep going. With any degree, you'll obviously be faced with challenges, mm-hmm. with high demands. But if it's something that you truly love, you'll make sacrifices. You'll keep working hard and you'll strive for that goal. Bushra, I wanted to mention your experience. On top of everything, you also spent 2 summers in Istanbul as a EU affairs intern while working part-time at the Istanbul Jazz Festival. This is where you conducted in-depth research on economic and political relations between Turkey and the EU. You also were active in drafting various documents. You drafted, copy edited, published, and translated news articles for the weekly e-bulletin covering the developments concerning Turkey-EU relations. Can you talk more about that experience?
My internship at the Economic Development Foundation in Istanbul was sort of my debut, my first real work experience at a quasi-governmental, quasi-NGO kind of institution. I learned a great deal on the history of EU-Turkey relations, customs union, and Turkey's accession process to the EU, like which chapters have already reached a stalemate, which ones will likely be sold, won't be sold in the next decade or so, etc. As interns, we played a full part in assisting the junior and senior researchers in their research on Turkey-EU relations and Turkey's alignment with the EU acquis communautaire. We also assisted with organizing international conferences and panels. It was a very fast-paced environment. Sometimes we would get calls from our point of contact at the parliament and be informed that a particular bill had passed hours or sometimes days before it was released to the press. I remember the feeling of excitement over putting an article together before everyone reads about it on the media. That was something I very much enjoyed doing as well.
On top of that, you were also a junior legal intern in Belgium. This is where you undertook legal research. You summarized and analyzed directives. You focused on work pertaining to anti-dumping legislation and cases in the areas of EU trade and customs law, with a special focus on anti-dumping, anti-subsidy, safeguards, and regulated industries, with specialization in product safety, chemicals, and standards. Bushra, with your experience and your exposure to EU customs and trade law, would you be able to discuss more about your experience?
At the time of my internship, it was a fascinating opportunity to be part of the research that was essential to preparing a client memorandum with my co-workers and to be included in the privileged and confidential attorney-client communications. Let's say our firm was asked to give a legal opinion on some legal implications of a country's unilateral adoption of certain measures, and the firm's task is to assess the legitimacy of the action in the light of certain regulations or directives. The firm was also handling WTO dispute settlement proceedings and assessing the consistency of certain trade measures under the WTO agreement, as well as giving opinions on the EU position in WTO rules of origin negotiations. Actually, one of the cases that they worked on had Canada as one of their parties. The WTO dispute was brought by the Republic of China against the anti-dumping measures imposed by Canada on its imports of carbon steel welded pipe originating in Taipei. And these were all very unique experiences for me, looking into the cases that I would otherwise not be able to see.
That's why you'll be a successful lawyer one day.
I hope so.
Bushra, I have to say that experience sounds like it was extremely rewarding, and you certainly learned a lot about EU customs and trade law. Another area that you have focused on consists of poverty alleviation. And the next question that I wanted to ask you is pertaining to that. As I mentioned, you have been actively involved in identifying challenges with providing immediate emergency to newcomers, as well as long-term problems that might arise within the permanent population. Bushra, you also provided input while interacting with diverse populations and orienting them to shelter protocols. What programs would you say should be further established in order to assist in poverty alleviation?
In my senior year, I attended an 8-week workshop series at Concordia University in Montreal. It was one of the best things that happened to me during my undergraduate studies. The program was entitled Organizing Sustainability, and the two main themes that dominated the workshop series was justice and empowerment, specifically in environmental advocacy. So we started off by exploring which groups carry the unequal burdens of environmental degradation and reflecting on the root causes of unsustainability. Then we moved to learning about campaigning, planning, messaging, so on and so forth. So I understood once again that social equity issues are at the heart of sustainable development of certain communities and thus are inextricably linked to poverty reduction. Social inequity is something that is a matter of concern, especially for vulnerable groups, as they are the ones who are most disadvantaged from all this. What poverty alleviation programs do is using some strategic tools to mitigate the effects of globalization and neoliberalism, which affects distinct societal groups, particularly women, children, elderly, and minority groups in both rural and sometimes in urban settings. These strategic tools include education, economic empowerment, health and income redistribution. So essentially, power reduction programs should boost the development of the society as a whole. Effective mechanisms and strategies for poverty alleviation that are put in place by the government should ensure sustainable outcomes. And such plans or programs, like an income generator project, a local grassroots project, for example, should get the support from both civil society and businesses and private sectors.
I think that's a highly relevant point, because oftentimes in terms of poverty alleviation, you oftentimes have to have the government involved mm-hmm. in actively establishing these programs in order to alleviate mm-hmm. the poverty. But at the same time, it's crucial for not only the public sector to be involved, but for the private sector to be involved as well. There are a lot of companies out there who have the resources and who have the funds to donate money, to contribute to this type of alleviation. At the same time, I think that associations and various organizations that are out there can be a powerful way of getting the message out there. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sometimes when it comes to assistance, it's highly relevant for the programs, for the government and for businesses to work together in order to provide a strong program. But oftentimes educating people about what poverty is, what ways can society as a whole alleviate poverty mm-hmm. is fundamental. I think that having an open dialogue as to mm-hmm. some of these issues internationally, but also in Canada, in the United States, poverty does exist. There are different socioeconomic classes. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's an upper class, middle class, a lower class. And I think that having a dialogue and engaging people as to some of these issues internationally and in our own country is important. Looking at what programs have been established, looking at what more can be implemented in order to alleviate mm-hmm. some of these problems is crucial. And obviously, if you look at different parts of the world, the poverty is more extreme in certain areas. I do encourage students who are out there and who are interested in becoming more involved to look at what these programs have to offer. Mm-hmm. And then if you want to be involved, it's oftentimes useful to do your research and then contact the association or the organization that's of interest to you. Lastly, would you like to share any final words with our listeners today?
Well, thank you very much for the interview. Thanks a lot for your time. It was lovely. Throughout our talk, I try to emphasize the importance of mentorship and how it changed and still continues to develop me professionally and personally. People are out there to help you and provide you with guidance. So whether you want to pursue a career in international relations or not, no matter what stage you're at, learning from other people's experiences is always a good way to go. That's just one thing that we should all keep in mind.
Definitely. And Bushra, I want to sincerely thank you from the bottom of my heart for the second interview and for providing all of the youth and young professionals out there with valuable advice. It's always a pleasure talking to you about your experience. And I highly recommend for all of the students out there to listen to this interview, look at the feedback that Bushra has provided you with, and then also at the same time, remember that regardless of what field you decide to pursue, it's always useful to reach out to people. It's always useful to have a mentor. Obtaining mentorship from people who are in the industry that you want to pursue is not only relevant, but it can help you in the long term. Thank you so much for this interview.
Thank you for having me.